Hello, my name is Janine Taliratna. I'm an online engagement assistant with One Woman Project, and I'm here with Sabur Diu, host from Girls Chat Live. The One Woman Project is an intersectional feminist organization. We want to hold the conversation for how all parts of a person's identity can come together to form their lived experience. Engaging in these conversations with our peers can reduce experiences of discrimination and ultimately is part of our vision to achieve gender justice and equity. So both of our organizations operate on the stolen land of Indigenous peoples. The One Woman Project is based in Mianjin, Nam, the Ngunnawal country, to name a few, and I'm speaking to you from the land of the Wurundjeri people. We would like to acknowledge that these lands have never been ceded and institutional racism continues to affect the lives of many Indigenous people today. This podcast will be an extension from our workshop we collaborated together as part of our hashtag Change the Channel campaign. OWP launched the Change the Channel campaign with the support of YouthCan, which provides tailored resources to educate and empower young people on how gender stereotypes are portrayed in youth media and influences harmful attitudes and expectations towards men and women and those identifying across the gender spectrum. This podcast is an extension from our workshop on how toxic masculinity and femininity are portrayed on our screens. You can still see our educational resources and Instagram recordings from the campaign on our Instagram page at One Woman Project. More specifically, we will point out key examples of how the player boy versus nice guy stereotypes are portrayed in Netflix films like Ginny and Georgia, and how both these stereotypes reinforce toxic masculinity. We will then turn to how these tropes are embodied and challenged across categories of race and gender, specifically turning to the portrayal of Black masculinity on our screens. Finally, we will wrap up discussing ways to call out toxic behaviours in peer groups and relationships. Before we get into the conversation, I wanted to throw it over to Sabur to introduce herself and Girls Chat Live.
Hi everyone, so I'm Sabur and I'm from Girl Chat. And Girl Chat Live is a social group for young women in the western suburbs of Melbourne to discuss social issues such as social media, body image, and of course, toxic masculinity. So we usually have fortnightly sessions that are streamed on Zoom, but we also have in-person sessions at the Melton Library. So we really welcome you to come. And our vision is just that young women are connected and we use our voice to dissect issues that are really important to us and important to our community.
So first, we would like to discuss the key question, what is toxic masculinity? So toxic masculinity is a weapon wielded against men to force a set of attitudes and expectations, and they're pressured by society to conform to these ideas of toughness as a way of attaining a sense of validation and power.
Yeah, and so the New York Times even writes in their 2019 article, What is Toxic Masculinity?, that researchers have defined it in part as a set of behaviours and beliefs that include the following, suppressing emotions or masking distress, maintaining an appearance of hardness, violence as an indicator of power, like the tough guy behaviour. So in other words, toxic masculinity is what can come of teaching boys that they can't express emotions openly, that they have to be all the time tough, and that anything other than that makes them more feminine or makes them weak. So it doesn't mean that all men are inherently toxic, but just that society has these set of values that are making men feel like they have to conform to potentially toxic behaviours and values that go against what is socially acceptable. So when we were thinking about putting this podcast together, we were considering some Netflix shows that we watched during lockdown and what might be good examples of toxic masculinity on our screens. And the show Ginny and Georgia came to mind. I'm not sure if you've watched it before.
Yeah, I actually have. Like, it's a very popular TV show on Netflix. I think it's rated number one, I think, at the time, like, I think mid-year this year, like, yeah, it was very popular. So yeah, Ginny and Georgia follows Ginny Miller, a 15-year-old girl, and her mom, Georgia, who settled into a new town called New England, where Georgia decides to settle down with her daughter, Ginny, and her son, Austin, to give them a better life. than she had before. We've chosen to explore Ginny and Georgia because it's more current to teenage pop culture, involving, you know, cheesy pickup lines from TikTok. It appeals to our Gen Z audience since it blew up massively on Netflix. And teenagers, you know, it also kind of opens the door and gives a bit of a view of how teenagers are, like, explore their sexuality in films. And we get to see an insight into that in Ginny and Georgia. So in Ginny and Georgia, Marcus is portrayed as the playboy and uses his charm to assert his sexual entitlement over Ginny's body. So a playboy is a form of toxic masculinity. It's kind of this norm to be involved in, or to portray this kind of front that a guy is, like, involved in multiple sexual relationships, and he gains sexual entitlement over their partner's bodies, and that sort of gives them a sense of status and kind of inflates their ego. And we see this quite evidently in Marcus's character. And in the pilot episode, we see Marcus climbing into Ginny's window. So he climbs in through the window and interrogates Ginny about her romantic interest in a popular nice guy, Hunter. Despite Ginny and Marcus's respective love interests, they're immediately, you know, making out within seconds. And Ginny helps Marcus take her clothes off, and, like, they're literally having intercourse. And the camera allows us to see them exposed, and there's no consent explicitly shown between the two partners. And it's quite evident that Marcus kind of leads Ginny on, sort of uses that as a weapon to emotionally manipulate her. And he's not held accountable for cheating on his girlfriend as well. So Marcus was also in a relationship with someone when he slept with Ginny, and he uses Ginny to fulfill his sexual pleasures. From that image, we know that the audience is immediately allured by his charm and misled into believing he has, you know, that he's good looking. While Ginny begins to fall for Marcus's, you know, charming facade, we know that, you know, Marcus is actually not a great guy. Like, he literally cheated on his girlfriend and just basically emotionally manipulating Ginny into believing that he's interested in her.
Yeah. And also, like, Janine, by the end of the season, we learn that Marcus hadn't even had sex before. So what does that kind of tell us about, you know, how these TV shows portray what sexuality is and how men have to, you know, embody this, like, dominant in the bedroom kind of trope? How do you think that that's, what's toxic about that to you?
Yeah, definitely. I think it just portrays that kind of, reinforces that playboy trope, where he kind of uses his physical attractiveness as a sense of, like, entitlement and privilege for Ginny to, you know, constantly seek his validation. And we see this evidently played out in the sexting scene when, you know, Ginny was, you know, she sent a half-nude picture to Hunter, so her boyfriend at the time, and obviously she didn't really get that attention, so she sent it to Marcus, and Marcus started sexualizing her, and she really enjoyed that experience. So here we know that she was, again, misled and kind of sexually allured into believing that Marcus is attracted to her, but also allowing Marcus to sexually objectify her as well. And it kind of reinforces this kind of toxic relationship between them.
Yeah. So that's a great overview, like, of Marcus. Marcus is being this dominant, seductive guy who just easily captures the heart of Ginny. But on the other end of the spectrum, there is Hunter, who is portrayed as a soft boy. You know, the way that he treats Ginny with respect, he draws up really strict boundaries. That leads audiences to believe that he's a simp. And for anyone who doesn't know what simp is, it's like it's a very popular word that's used in pop culture today. So it means, like, somebody, a man who puts too much value on a female for no reason. So simps are seen as weak. They're seen as people who don't really have any values, don't really have any backbone, quite thirsty as well after sexual gratification, or just somebody who really drops their standards in order to attract somebody that is substantially more attractive than them. And so this is a word that's predominantly used against men, and it's kind of seen as an attack on somebody's masculinity as well. So we see with Ginny and Georgia, Hunter is the opposite of a playboy. He's quite welcoming, he's quite nice, and that goes against what Ginny really desires, because, you know, you can see her kind of tossing up between the two. She really wants Marcus because Marcus is so attractive and he's so alluring, and he's, you know, got all this going for him. And we can even see in the way that he's characterized with his costume, the dark hair and, you know, mysterious demeanor about him. And Hunter looks really friendly. He's always wearing like bright t-shirts. He's always smiling. So you could already see that distinction that the producers are making between the two. And we know with Ginny's actions as well, she was way more like gravitating towards Hunter, which is sad for more gravitating towards Marcus. And it's sad for Hunter, who misses out. And, you know, time and again, we always see this trope in popular culture, in other TV series and other movies, where the nice guy always misses out or he's seen as not desirable. So that simp trope is something that's quite problematic in masculinity, because it's making guys who do draw up quite strict boundaries and who do treat women with a lot more, not always treating women better, but treating women with a little bit more restraint and a little bit more consideration as men who, you know, don't get any action, that's kind of annoying or clingy. So we find that quite problematic. And Hunter's kindness and respect for Ginny is really quite downplayed throughout the series by Marcus's inflated sense of ego. So this kind of shows us how toxic masculinity is embodied through physical attractiveness and is valued way more than how men show respect in a relationship.
Yeah, definitely. And some of the examples that are seen in the show is when, like, you know, he makes those incredible grand gestures of, you know, singing a song to a Ginny, saying things like, you know, you really mean so much to me, really pouring out his heart to her. And he respectfully asks her out, you know, I was wondering if you want to maybe be my girlfriend, which is quite, it's juxtaposed by Marcus, you know, freely crossing those boundaries, those physical boundaries, and without her consent, and like manipulating her into believing that he's interested in her. And so, yeah, contrastingly, we see Hunter is clearly undesirable because he puts too much value on Ginny, and that is not valued in the TV series at all. Instead, it sort of positions the audience to think that expressing your feelings and showing respect is less masculine in hetero relationships. This in turn fetishizes the idea of disrespecting women and being tough as the norm for how men should behave in heterosexual relationships. And I feel like the player boy always appears emotionally detached and masculine, as opposed to the nice guy who's seen as emotional. And we see this evidently in Hunter's character. Towards the end, we see Ginny being with Marcus at the end, while Hunter's like left to pick up the pieces of their broken relationship. And yeah, it highlights how the film reinforces toxic masculinity through the player boy stereotype, and shows how it's valued more than how men show respect in a relationship.
So now that we've talked about aspects of masculinity, like the playboy versus the simp trope, we really want to talk about a different type of masculinity that's portrayed on Netflix and Stan shows. And that's the idea that men are violent. And so we know with a lot of these films that men are portrayed as, you know, really aggressive, or there's always a fight scene where a guy is fighting over something like his status or his ego. And we see men displaying violent behaviors, whether that's a punch on, whether that's gun crime. Regardless, it's a very important trope in a lot of Netflix and Stan shows. The problem with this trope, no matter how universal it is that it actually ignores some of the layers, the deep intersectional layers behind it. Intersectionality is basically the ways in which different aspects of a person's identity can expose them to overlapping forms of discrimination and marginalization. So we know that with a lot of Netflix shows, they actually portray black violence in a different way. So black violence has an especially aggressive angle to it. There's usually drugs involved or guns involved or prison. So we love these shows like Top Boy or Menace to Society or Power, but we kind of fail to see the invisible ways in which masculinity has a specific intersectional angle and is actually displays black violence in a more aggressive way. And this in turn kind of perpetuates ideas about what it means to be a black man. So when we talk about black men, it's really important that we specify that black men are not a homogenous group, that there's different types of black men. So with Netflix's narrow portrayal of African-American culture, this filters down and actually affects the way that African men and Indigenous men perceive themselves in Australia. So Netflix shows often represent African-American or black communities as poor, in a continuous cycle of poverty, not exposed to the same opportunities as other racial groups, a general lack of social mobility, a lack of visibility, and repeating the same stereotypes that others in turn believe and shape the way that they are treated. And so black men all over the world, whether in African-American context or here in Australia as African men or Indigenous men, may internalize these representations. If we don't have a critical view of these Netflix shows, they really do get away with promoting a lot of the same narratives and communities that marginalize men and make black men seem like this is all there is to them. So I find that quite problematic, and yeah, it's something that needs to be addressed more. And I know that a lot of people on social media point out the need for more, you know, representative TV shows where black masculinity is not just seen as something that's like violent or like drug obsessed or incarceration is the norm. That we really need to challenge the narrative and hold Netflix to greater account when it comes to perpetuating stereotypes of black communities.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's a very good point that you brought up. You know, that a lot of black men, you know, it's the society that kind of positions black men to feel, you know, disempowered in their communities and not being able to embody emotions and feel their authentic self. And yeah, it's really based on how the media narrative kind of feeds into those toxic tropes of black masculinity. And I think it's really important for Netflix shows, as you said earlier, Zabor, to actually explore the impact society has on black men today and sort of show how the pressures of their community can actually exacerbate mental health issues and kind of limit men to be emotionally aware and kind of allow them to express their emotions quite freely. And it can be quite damaging if it's not allowed, because it can perpetuate into violence and aggression, and that's not the way any man deserves to live in society today.
Absolutely, Janine. I think it's spot on that you highlight that mental health concern, because I feel like a lot of these shows, and some shows do really masterfully try to encapsulate the black experience. And that's not to deny the challenges in black communities at all. Like, all communities have their own distinct set of challenges, and displaying drugs and violence is not just always perpetuating the cycle. There might be, you know, there might be a solid reason to this, and not every single black man conforms to that ideology, but it's that kind of willful ignorance of, you know, actually challenging the stereotypes, having a deep dive, a critical view into the conditions that perpetuate these kinds of ideals for black men, these kinds of expectations that they will be violent and deviant from a young age just to survive. I think there needs to be better representation and better consideration of the mental health effects of such representations in our communities.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Zabor. And I think it all starts with that, with media and how they portray black men, and being able to show being their authentic self, being emotionally aware, self-aware about their own existence, and being free, you know, freely able to perform a healthy form of masculinity. in their community and in their relationships.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great point. So moving on to, you know, wrapping up our discussion, we want to talk about how we can indeed make these changes happen. How can we educate and empower young men or boys to overcome toxic masculinity? And I just want to jump in and say, I think toxic masculinity needs a combined effort. It's not just men who have to overcome it. I think society is responsible for dismantling the attitudes and the expectations that we have of men to be a particular way. And men have a huge obligation as well to, you know, really be critical about their peers and really critical about the types of behaviors that they condone, either willfully or in ignorance on social media, the types of, you know, how words are so powerful, how jokes are really actually powerful. It's not always just funny to say something. Maybe it's trendy, or maybe it's, you know, means it's something lighthearted to you, but it actually has a really big impact. So I just want to ask you, Janine, like, how do we hold men who perpetuate toxic masculinity accountable, whether it is through like that verbal, those jokes on social media or posting inappropriate content, or you know, how do we correct men who do use violence against women? Yeah, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question to ask support as well, and something that our audience can ponder over even after this podcast ends, to actually consider what they have perpetuated in their friend groups, those gendered stereotypes in relation to toxic masculinity in their peer groups and relationships. Is it the misogynistic jokes that they post on Instagram just for a laugh? Is it like insulting men's bodies because they're not buff enough, or sexualizing women in school settings? You know, those are the situations where we have to kind of deal with and kind of call out those toxic behaviors. And so it all starts off with that conversation with your peers, you know, calling them out, saying that, come on, mate, you're better than that. And saying things like, it's not smart to say such things. It doesn't make you a better person. Think about what you said. Words and phrases like that can be very helpful in diffusing those kind of situations when it arises. Yeah, and I'm really interested to know how healthy masculinity can sound like in relationships and peer groups as well. I think that's a really important point to make as well.
Yeah, definitely. And first of all, I just want to say, like, that's a really important point, saying like we have to up the standards, even if it feels uncomfortable and it sounds kind of daggy, saying, oh, you're better than this. I think those are really important conversations to have. Holding men and everyone to a higher standard is really important for starting to deconstruct toxic masculinity, and correcting the behaviors and correcting the standards that society sets of everyone is really important. I think, yeah, healthy masculinity is something that I don't think it's something that's easy to define. I think healthy masculinity, though, definitely involves a lack of aggression, a lack of violence. For a man to exercise his masculinity, that shouldn't mean being aggressive or being buff or being, you know, super tall, super handsome, super attractive, super seductive. That shouldn't be what masculinity entails. Masculinity should be an expression of your identity. It should be an expression of who you are in a positive way. I think everyone should have the ability to construct their own identity and say who they want to be without looking to Netflix shows and being constrained by opinions that this is how I should be, like I should look like that, I should act like that, I should pull these moves to this girl, or, you know, if I behave like Marcus did, maybe I will get more girls, or if I, you know, behave like Hunter, I would be absolutely doomed. So I think Netflix is really responsible for setting the bar on what healthy masculinity can be. And there's great examples of shows who are doing a really good job of dismantling toxic masculinity and making it something that's less rigid and more defined by somebody's identity.
Yeah, 100%. I completely second that point you made about, you know, Netflix shows that are critiquing toxic masculinity. We see this evidently in sex education, right? You know, where Otis is, you know, he freely expresses his emotions and feelings towards Maeve, rather than portraying him as this nonchalant, vacant, emotionally vacant person. I think in season two, they kind of end in that kind of poetic sort of monologue where he expresses his emotions, right? Like, it's always been you, Maeve. And she kind of looks to the stars, and it's quite a beautiful moment. You know, it's not that kind of stereotypical ending where the bad guy, like the bad boy, always ends up with the nice girl. It's quite authentic and genuine. And I think young boys should, you know, be you know, freely able to express those emotions and feel comfortable about their about themselves, rather than being constrained by society's expectations and attitudes towards the way men should behave.
Absolutely. That's such a good point, Janine. I feel like if shows did a better job of showing a spectrum of behaviours, you know, a spectrum of identities, of masculinities that would go towards deconstructing that one idea that masculinity is a monolith, you know, something that's so unattainable, something that you have to cheat your way or, you know, lie your way into or be aggressive to achieve and to accomplish. There is no accomplishment in that. And so it's really good that you're pointing to shows that are, you know, starting to deconstruct that. And I think, I really hope that is follows in the future. So we just wanted to have this conversation about toxic masculinity and the intersection with race, as we are intersectional feminists and passionate about these conversations with our peers. As women of colour, we see how these stereotypes play out and have been interested in unpacking it to reflect on how we can shift these attitudes. And so we really thank you for listening to our podcast, and we hope that you check out the One Woman Project Instagram page and website to keep updated about, you know, all the upcoming events and our upcoming podcasts next year. And you check out Girl Chat as well. We'll be really keen to have you join in on the conversations.